closet is centered on the document called F108 of 1996, which is the supreme law of the country. It forces those who are representatives of the people to ensure that the people of South Africa are put as a priority in whatever we do. And there's acknowledgement in the preamble of the Constitution that South Africa, with the legacy of apartheid, must still be held, must work towards eliminating the remnants of apartheid, because apartheid was a system that was clear, never a mistaken system. This legacy will still remain with us for some time to come. And there will be those that want us to believe that apartheid is gone, so there's no more apartheid, when the legacy of apartheid is much alive and speaking. For example, because of apartheid, land ownership in South Africa, you may use whatever nice word to justify it, is still in the hands of the few. And if you follow how did they acquire that land, it's questionable. Now, the people of South Africa, who God gave this land to, many a time are landless. Now, those that are in government are in authority at all levels, national, provincial, and local government, politicians, and professional administrators, they all have the duty to reverse the imbalances of the past, to ensure that the people of South Africa, in particular the poor, must enjoy being a full citizen of South Africa without land and economy. You will not enjoy much. You will see, because people want to think, but the reality is that which confronts us on daily basis. Others are forever walking towards schools, others are walking towards their workplaces, but others are driving, others are flying to the workplaces. That's the situation in South Africa. It's not a mistake, it's a legacy of apartheid, which all of us have a duty to prevent. Finding nice ways to justify it, make it look better, is a betrayal to the majority. So it's important that whatever we say, we must know where we're coming from. We must also know if as people who are expected to change, to reverse imbalances, are doing that, or we are co-opted by those that brought the apartheid. So we must refuse. We may be you who still standing still, because it is not really a nice way to fight with those that have economy, because they are powerful. They are able to ensure that they influence the whole society in various ways. So I think we will be listening to the presenter, who will be taking us through this bill and how the law would be telling us what to do in part of the Constitution, because that's the basic piece of law, that when we deal with this matter of land expropriation, when we deal with the laws that are pertaining to land, must know whatever laws that you are working on must benefit the poor. If laws are not benefiting the poor, then it means that we are still not addressing what we should be addressing. So, ladies and gentlemen, the agenda or the program of the workshop is in your hands. So I want to repeat it. I guess the first presenter would be from our parliament, from the legal section, would be the one who leads in terms of explaining the difficulties of what this law says, who, where are we expected to touch it up. I hope you will also think carefully about the plight of the poor, the majority in South Africa. So, and then after the input by the parliamentary legal advisor, there will be input by the Department of Public Works, just to take us along where are we moving and what are the issues. The workshop is really, we are not deciding. We are getting information. That is why we would also give space for us to deliver it. Say our understanding about the things, because land issues are topical issues. So you let that input. So those that are taking records will be taking records, which we will use in future. So a workshop is arming you towards the future. It's not a platform where you finalize, but it gives you opportunity even to connect things that you may not have realized initially as you move. So, and I think those are the few words that is opening. Maybe before I hand over to the presentation, I will request my portfolio secretary to give the apology that we have received.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, everyone. The following approaches are written at the office: Honorable P. E. Adams, Honorable Sitole, Honorable Matthay, Honorable Feet, and Honorable Jobo will only be joining us a bit later. We also have an apology from the DG of the department. He's attending to another meeting. Ms. Lawrence Rolada has been nominated as the person leading the delegation. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. We're quite happy that this woman is leading the delegation from this department. Thank you very much, Gillian. Because you are always with us, so in my opening remarks, I didn't really elevate you. Thank you very much. I know, but it's important to acknowledge your presence is making our workshop very good. I know that you are also you are outspoken as well. Thank you very much. Can we then hand over to the rep of this parliament, the legal section, the group? Let's hear how you interpret where we are. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. Greetings to everyone in the house. The name is Phumelele Ngema. As already been indicated, I am a parliamentary legal advisor trying to assist in the processes of this committee. From the briefing or the instruction that we received, it was indicated as a way of introduction to what we are going to be doing. We were asked as the legal services to look into the bill in consideration with what the president has said, as well as look at the judgments that have spoken to what public participation is, and those judgments that were specifically asked to look into was the judgment Lamotta which the court decided on in 2016, and the Doctors for Life, which is one of the very initial cases on public participation, where the court defines what exactly is public participation and what the relevant sections of the Constitution are meaning, and gave us an interpretation that should direct what we do. And the third case that we were asked to look at was Matatia. So having said that, I think the issue that we are trying to grapple with and find solution to is whether, as public representatives that have been elected by the people of the country, during the legislative processing of the expropriation bill, which is Bill B4D 2015, were the people heard? Were the people able to be given a chance to influence the final decision of the legislature in terms of what way the final product is going to look like? So if we look at the bill, which is B4D of 2015, that is the only bill that this committee is looking at, for clarity's sake. Because remember, as the legislative process was going on, we first had B4 of 2015, which was the bill introduced by the minister. And that is the bill which initiated all the work that was done. And B4D 2015 is then the final bill which has been looked at by both houses, the National Assembly and the National Council of Provinces. And that is the bill that was passed by Parliament, and it went to the President for assent, but instead of the President putting his signature to make this bill the law of the country, the President received petitions from the public and people that were interested into making their voices heard further. And the President looked at those petitions, and after considering them, he then decided to write to the Speaker and the Chairperson of the National Council of Provinces. So there are two letters that the President wrote to Parliament. The first letter was a letter where the President required or requested that he be given information in terms of what exactly transpired in line with what the petitions were alleging. That first letter, the response in the second letter that the President has written, he indicates that the response was not sufficient to give him ground to make a decision as to what the submissions were saying and as to what it was alleged to have gone wrong in Parliament. In light of that, therefore, the President, after the first 2016 letter, he then wrote the second letter. And the second letter is the official referral letter that is dated 14 February 2017. And that is the letter we need to be looking at to guide the process as from now onwards. So that letter was put on the order paper in the ATC for Parliament on the 28th of February 2017, and the bill was then referred to the committee for the committee to start working on it in line with the reservations that the President had. Now, if we look at the two letters that I've made reference to, as I said, the first letter was only looking for information and advice, and the President has indicated in the second letter to say that that was not sufficient to enable him to decide what had happened. Hence, we got the formal referral and remission of the expropriation bill. What does that then mean? The President has invoked Section 79 of the Constitution. And Section 79 of the Constitution, if I may just read, because I want us to be very clear, if I may just read just number one, it says the President must either assent to and sign a bill passed in terms of this charter, or if the President has reservations about the constitutionality of the bill, the President must refer it back to the National Assembly for reconsideration. And that is exactly where we are at. The President, because of the letter that is dated 14 February 2017 to the Speaker, has referred the expropriation bill back to Parliament. And in that letter, now we need to look at what the President has said. And because of the joint rules of Parliament, which further dictate what Parliament should do, since Parliament is a creature of statute, we look at the Constitution as the chairperson that indicated the supreme law of the country, it guides us. We then look at the rules of Parliament, which also is an empowerment that comes from the Constitution to say Parliament may make the rules to guide itself as to how it handles its obligations that arise out of the Constitution. Now, what has happened is that in the referral letter that I've said is dated 14 February 2017, the President has raised a number of concerns. And those concerns are termed as reservations of the President, in line with what Section 79(1) has stated. In terms of the joint rules of Parliament, which you find in Part 8 of the Brown Book, the joint rules, Section 203 indicates that we cannot, when Parliament engages on the concerns of the President, you cannot go beyond what the President has raised. Now, in brief summary, what the President has raised, if we look at the second letter, not the first letter, the President is indicating that having looked at the judgment that he has specifically termed or expressed, which are the ones that I said the committee also indicated that we must try to restrict our advice, having looked at them, being the Doctors for Life, the Matatiela, and the Lamosa judgment. The President is saying that if you look at those judgments and what I have received as a petition, I have an issue with the obligation that Parliament has in terms of the Constitution, which is the obligation to facilitate public involvement. That's the main first point he has made. The second thing the President said, having looked at the judgment, especially Lamosa, I think I have felt a concern in terms of the processes of the National Council of Provinces when they facilitated that public involvement, which is an obligation in terms of the Constitution. Then the President mentioned another bad thing and said, I also worry, looking at how Lamosa judgment was given and handed down, and looking at the issues that that specific judgment was dealing with, which was the restitution land, which was the restitution of land rights act. Then the President said, looking at that and how close the content of the expropriation bill is to the issues that were dealt with in that act, as well as the bill when it was a bill, I am worried that the same fate that that act suffered from the Constitutional Court, the same may result for the expropriation bill. Hence then, the President said, the other thing I'm concerned about is that the National House of Traditional Leaders, from what I see and I've been told, it seems like the bill was not specifically sent to the National House of Traditional Leaders, and he made reference to Section 18 of the Traditional Leadership Framework Act. When we get into details, I will speak to that as well and how we understand it and what view we are taking. Now, having said that, and from the manner that the President has crafted his letter of referring the expropriation bill, it is clear in our view that the bill raises reservations that are both substantive and procedural in nature. This is added to having considered that the joint rules of Parliament are saying, number one, we need to be contained only to the issues that the President has raised. Secondly, we cannot touch on the substance or the procedure unless the concerns were coming from the President. Now, The purpose of the expropriation bill is to give effect to the state in all the levels the right to expropriate property, including land. And in relation to the issue of referring the bill to the National House of Traditional Leaders, that is where the president was saying, because there is communal land that is in the hands of traditional leaders, did you consider that part and give them a special ear or not? Now, on the procedural aspect that the president has raised, the president is basically saying there was no proper consultation, which resulted in proper public involvement. Even without being direct, but if you read the letter, you can pick up that it is in relation to Section 72 as well as Section 118 of the Constitution. And so, those are the constitutional provisions that provide the right, that provide the obligation to facilitate public involvement. For the National Assembly, it is Section 59 of the Constitution, and for the NCOP, as I said, it is Section 72, and for the provincial legislatures, it is Section 118. Now, for our purposes, I think we need to be clear as to what is exactly the obligation, and as I said, the court has tried to take us through. Public facilitation deals with how you bring public input to influence the decision maker. And public involvement is then when you have facilitated to get the public to where the decision maker is, so that they make their input and they then influence the decision if whatever they are bringing to the attention of the legislature is considered, taken into account, and then given effect to by then the changes that will be made. As we will find that from the judgments that are mentioned, public facilitation is a constitutional obligation, and there is no way of getting out of it. And each House of Parliament, since Parliament has two houses, and I have indicated, there is a specific provision that speaks to it and says, National Assembly specifically, you have an obligation which does not relate or has to overlap with the obligation of the NCOP, which means when the NCOP or the NA conducts its public facilitation obligation, you cannot then say, because the NCOP did a thorough exercise in public facilitation, it does not then require the NA to conduct its own public hearing, vice versa as well. It is standalone obligations that are imputed to each house without saying they relate to the other, or the other will then excuse the other for having done the work for the other. And this comes out from paragraph 82 of La Monza, where the court, and as in our previous opinion did indicate, the court specifically expresses that a failure of one house in parliament becomes a failure of parliament. And as I indicated, that is because in that judgment, which we will quickly go to now, in the La Monza judgment in brief, that is where the problem had been. The president, as well as the court, found that the president, as well as the court, found that the processes that were conducted before the NCOP are the ones that were problematic and were raising concerns. And that included, since we all know that the NCOP is a representative house of the provinces through provincial legislatures. So the court found that the provincial legislatures, in the manner that they conducted their public involvement, it was not satisfactory, it was not sufficient. And the manner that also the NCOP took whatever came from the provincial legislatures, considering that there's a finding that it was not sufficient what was done for the lack of whatever, as the court had explained, then made, even though there was no expression that the National Assembly did very well, but For the failure of what the NCOP had done, it became the failure of Parliament. And so, as I have seen from the inputs and the submissions that are coming from the public, most people then are interpreting the letter of the President for referring the expropriation bill to say that the President is saying the NCOP did not do right. But if we look at paragraph 82 to say that what went wrong in Parliament went wrong in Parliament without having to point at one house. Therefore, that is why we are having this workshop today to then understand what exactly can the National Assembly, through the Portfolio Committee and conducting the processes that are necessary for the referred expropriation bill, what should the Portfolio Committee do? And what should the NCOP also do? So clearly, from La Mota, as I said, from the recent judgment in terms of public participation, the La Mota judgment in summary basically said there is a need for an effective engagement between the public and legislature. As you do that, you allow an appropriate dialogue between the elected representatives of the people and the people and the electorate, which will then be governed by the law that the legislature you are making. Secondly, as I said, the main point and the crucial point that we need to move with from here onwards is to appreciate that Parliament is one. Because there's National Assembly and National Council of Provinces, it doesn't mean there are two parliaments. Hence, the failure of one house is the failure of another house. The Doctors for Life, which is the central case between La Mota and Matatie, but the good thing is that all three of these cases, they are found in one thing, and their main purpose is to define what is the obligation to facilitate public involvement. What does it mean? The Doctors for Life indicated that the facilitation of public participation is a constitutional requirement and an obligation in order to ensure an open and transparent government when legislative organs are making the laws of the country. It is a duty. It is an obligation. So the duty to facilitate public involvement embraces two principles, which are constitutional principles and the manner that our democracy has been crowned and has been also accepted as the democratic democracy that we chose. It's a principle to consult and a principle to participate. So those that are in government, they have an obligation to consult the electorate. They have an obligation to consult the public at large. And the public has an obligation to participate in the avenues that are given to them so that there is transparency, there is understanding, and it is clear what each side of the spectrum is doing. So, having said that, the Matatia judgment, concerning what was said in the Doctors for Life, actually found that in deciding then how to engage the public so that Parliament or the legislatures in provincial legislatures may know the views of the people, Parliament, as well as the provincial legislatures, they have a broad discretion to determine how best to fulfill this constitutional obligation. And each case must be dealt with separately as that specific case. You cannot say there is precedent, because in the traditional leadership bill we did A, B, C, then that's how we should go. The court said there is open, wide, broad discretion on Parliament to decide how to go about, as long as they are in line with the Constitution as well as complying with the rules of Parliament. The court further said there must be meaningful opportunity to hear those who are consulted, and as they participate, that meaningful opportunity must then result in influencing the decision. Thirdly, the main thing which we need to understand, which will take away that distinction where most inputs are then saying, because it was failure of the NCOP, then we need to just at the National Assembly stage do nothing but refer the bill to the NCOP for them to correct their procedural aspect. The court said there is no provision of the Constitution that must be considered in isolation of the other. However, each provision of the Constitution must be construed compatible with the other one, and the basic principle of our constitutional democracy must be given effect to, which is participatory and representative democracy. That then is the main principle and guiding factor of the process as to how we move forward. As was indicated in my first slide, the main question as we are engaging in this process and in the manner that the President has crafted his letter is to ask ourselves, was the public given a chance to be heard? And if the Portfolio Committee can come to the conclusion that from their process, when they were facilitating public engagement in terms of Section 59, they are satisfied. Then the other questions are relating to the NCOP as well as the legislature. In terms of Section 118, which is the provision from the Constitution that empowers and gives this obligation to the provincial legislature, what is in the stage there is that also when provincial legislatures through the NCOP processes are given a chance, they must also, on their own, facilitate public involvement, and especially for the legislative processes. It is also clear from all the judgments that have spoken to the constitutional obligations of Parliament and the provincial legislatures, there is no Big Brother position that Parliament dictates as to what the provincial legislatures should do and the extent of how they go. That Big Brother position does not feature anywhere, and that is why there is 59, 72, and 118, which create parallel but separate obligations to make sure that public involvement is facilitated. Provincial legislatures are required to participate in national lawmaking processes, and that is why the Constitution, there is Section 75 and Section 76 of how each bill must be given serious attention once you follow how each bill fits into either of those provisions. The duty to facilitate public involvement is conferred on all legislatures, and that is to say on the national legislature being Parliament, on the provincial legislature, as well as at local level. But our main concern today is strictly restricted on public involvement and facilitating public involvement by the National Assembly, which is the first house of Parliament. Now, in order to determine whether the obligation has been met, this is what the court in all the three cases has indicated. The court will consider whether Parliament complies with the duty to make sure that public involvement is facilitated. What was done by Parliament was reasonable under the circumstances. What are the rules in terms of facilitating public participation saying? We must also be clear and know that public participation model for Parliament has been drafted, and it is also undergoing the review processes and the approval, and it's going to be a model that guides both houses as well as the legislatures and the other legislatures as to how to engage in ensuring that this obligation is fulfilled properly. So those three things are the main things that guide Parliament: the Constitution, the rules of Parliament, which will be the joint rules, the specific rules of each house, as well as the public participation model that is soon to be in place in Parliament. We must also look at the nature of the legislation and how it impacts on the provinces. The President has given us a clear indication onto that issue, and like I said, La Mota is also another instrument that indicates how such legislation as the one that we are dealing with can impact on the provinces. Another thing that we need to consider in order to find reliability in the chosen process that you took, is there an agent in pushing and frustrating that specific proposed legislation? Which means, are there factors that call for Parliament to fast track and find agency with that legislation? For instance, one example one can find is legislation which there's been a constitutional court judgment setting time frame that this thing must be corrected within a specific time. And maybe for argument's sake, I'm not saying the court has been so unreasonable to give us 3 months and say sort that out. It has never. Normally it's 18 months and above. So that's one of the agency factors that we need to be taken into consideration. Is it a matter of life and death if such legislation does not come into play? Another factor was to look especially on Section 76 bill, like expropriation. The expropriation bill is a Section 76 bill, which means its purpose and final intention, once it comes into law, it will hugely impact on the provinces. This is done so that the autonomy of each sphere of government is protected and maintained at all times. The third factor we need to look at are the methods chosen to facilitate public engagement, where they appropriate and where they adequate. And that is the decision that the committee will have to make, having looked at all the processes that you engage on for this bill. Thirdly, which is the main factor, because courts must not intervene or interfere with the autonomy of the other sphere of government or the other arm of government. The Constitution is very clear as to the mandates and the obligations of each arm. So the autonomy of Parliament at all times needs to be respected and be balanced with the right for the public to participate in public affairs, as well as ensuring that as Parliament has its own autonomy, Parliament is guaranteed to do the right thing and act according to the Constitution. Now the question, as I said, we need to look at, and at the end of the day, the committee, that is what is required to make a resolution, which will become a recommendation for the House once they take this matter forward. Has the National Assembly, in this specific instance, taken steps to afford the public a reasonable opportunity to participate effectively in the processes that you engage in for the expropriation bill? Then public involvement can be facilitated in two aspects. Like I said, you provide meaningful opportunities for the public to participate. The judgment has given us some direction as to what that means. You may take oral submission, you may do public hearings, either in Parliament or outside of Parliament. You can call for written submissions and consider the written submissions. There is quite a number, and Parliament, through all the previous Parliaments that we've seen, have done a steady job, and we are growing each and every year and each and every term of each Parliament. The second aspect we take into our account, the measures that were taken, did they ensure that people are able to take advantage, to come to the places where those presented opportunities were needed to take place? And that's basically what public participation is all about. Now, having tried to sum up the judgments and just certainly provide to you what is expected of Parliament, I have tried to explain, if you look at that small graph or graphic image there, like I said, the observations from the President, the bill is back to Parliament, and Parliament must do what needs to be done. But the reservations of the President, because of the joint rule, they dictate to us how far we can go and how far we cannot go. Again, the NCOP processes involve the select committee that the bill gets to be referred to, as well as provincial legislatures, and the specific provision of the Constitution then bring about what needs to be done. For our purposes, we must now decide how to handle the referral that the president has sent and the reservation. At the end of the day, the main thing that we need to be satisfied and have a positive answer to is that for the expropriation bill, there was meaningful engagement. And because of, like I said, this bill raises two aspects. In terms of the joint rules, which I am trusting because we submitted the presentation and the guidelines of what we will be speaking to, at least on the assumption that it was sent to the members on time. I will not touch more on the rules, but that they, like I've spoken to them, they speak for themselves and they are very clear. So because of the referral from the president and because of the inputs that I've already looked at, which justify the action of the president to refer back to the bill, as well as the inputs that Parliament itself, through the Secretary to Parliament, has requested, that is the input from the National House of Traditional Leaders, as well as the other input which was not sought. There is a letter which I'm hopeful that the committee is aware of from the Legal Resources Center, which was sent some time ago as well, where they were making allegations and demands. And that then, because of what they said and what the National House of Traditional Leaders had said, it requires that I touch a little bit on the content of the bill. And the content of the bill, like I indicated, unfortunately I was not part of this bill when it was being processed in Parliament, but I've tried to put myself abreast of its content and try to understand it, and hence I'm glad that the committee requested the department as well to be part of us, because then they will give us the necessary input being the originators and owners of the bill, and so everything for them is probably clearer than it is for me. So the memorandum and the objects of the bill, they give us a good summary if really one did not get a chance to go to the bill itself and look at the content. But fortunately for the members, I'm assuming that most of us were part of the previous processes, and so we are clear on the content of the bill. The bill, as indicated, it provides guidance and framework that when government expropriates, that needs to be done consistently. I think that is one of the other reasons, besides looking at the schedule, that makes this bill a Section 76 bill. Now, taking us to the reservations of the president and the input that comes from the National House of Traditional Leaders. The rules of Parliament, like I said, contain us to the reservations of the president. So the input that is coming from the National House of Traditional Leaders, the input has opened the bill to its substance, because their comments are relating to the substance of the bill, and they are making inroads into the content of the bill, and they are saying, consider this, this is our view. And eventually, if you are considering this, there is going to be amendments. Amendments to the expropriation bill D that has already gone to the president. Hence, if that is the process we are taking, we are now touching on the substance of the bill. And then that makes the bill, in terms of the rules, it makes the bill susceptible to the joint rules that relate to the consent on substance. And then, again, if you look at the input from the Legal Resources Center, which is saying, if they construe the letter of the president, and if they read the rules of Parliament and give an interpretation, the rules of Parliament are saying, don't go beyond what the president has said. And for their interpretation, therefore, the joint rules are saying to Parliament, only focus on the NCOP procedural aspect. Hence, they are making two demands. One of the demands is to say, because you If the president wants public participation or has an issue with public participation, it is not in conjunction with the processes that the National Assembly conducted, but it is in relation with the processes of the National Council of Provinces. And also for them, it relates on the manner that the mandate, the final and the negotiating mandate and the voting mandate, came to Parliament. Because one of the submissions indicated that those mandates, they actually came in before the NCOP, way after the set date had been given. Therefore, that is making it a procedural aspect, and therefore there is an error. So if there is that error to be corrected, it must only be the NCOP that corrects it, not the National Assembly. And for them, then they are saying, unless you can only do that, forget this bill and refer it back to the minister and withdraw it in Parliament. That is one of the demands they are making. But based on the construction they give to the Joint Rules of Parliament, which for us, we are saying that's not the case, because as I said, when you facilitate public participation, you cannot facilitate public participation on process only. When you are making someone participate, they must influence you. They must have an input that may or may not come to a decision that is different than you took earlier than before. And that is why then I'm saying, if you look at this bill and the manner the president has crafted his letter, it throws the whole thing and the baby back to Parliament to say, here's your second bite. Relook at everything that you feel possibly you were not happy or satisfied with yourself when you are relooking at it again. Now, like I have said, on the content of the bill and the rules of Parliament, there are specific provisions that I myself had a concern on, and hopefully the department, when it provides information from their side, they will also speak to it. And just to be specific on those sections, which also appears on the petition that the president received, because I tried to look at them after having requested them from the people that had them. Mainly it is clause 12.2 of the bill. Maybe the department may explain and provide some information, but the members would also recall as to what they deliberated on and the position that they took from previously. This thing is giving me some trouble. It freezes sometimes and refuses to move forward. But I'm hoping I'm clear enough to move along with you. Clause 12.2 is one of those that set out the factors that one needs to take into consideration when having taken a decision to expropriate and what fair and just compensation should be. So 12.2 is saying those that are listed there must not be considered. For me, it was a bit confusing and worrying because it contradicts what Section 25.3 of the Constitution is saying. Maybe I read it wrong, but the department would assist us in that regard. There are also constitutional contentions that the petitions raise, and they relate to clause 7, 8, and 9, the notices that need to take place prior to expropriation being taken. But then again, if you look especially to the content that they raise for clause 7, 8, and 9, I think clause 25 does permit variation on the time frame that other petitions had submitted to the president. So for me, looking at the bill, I think those four clauses are the ones that really gave me some red hairs, and maybe those are the ones that we may consider with the input from the department, and if the committee is satisfied. At 7, 8, and 9, but then also read them together with clause 25. for some of the submissions that were made in terms of other time frames not sufficient and whatever the submissions have indicated. I think Chairperson, having said that, that sums up basically the concerns that and also the processes to take forward in terms of this. And in my written paper, I did try to summarize the concerns that came from the National House of Traditional Leaders, and it relates to those provisions that I've just referred to mostly. And my standpoint is also outlined there, which I don't think we necessarily need to go through, but perhaps in summary the department can just assist and explain the position and maybe as to whether there is a justification to relook at that or it suffices what comes there. Because like I said, a provision of either the constitution or the law must not be used in isolation. So it could be possible that for our purposes, I possibly look at them in isolation. But they know the bill better than me, so they will provide a better understanding as to say, maybe what appears in 12.2 is counteracted by what appears in another provision, and therefore the issue that concerns people has been covered in this manner. That basically, Chairperson, for me, I am hoping I covered everything, and maybe lastly is just to indicate that if you look at the lifespan of this bill, it is definitely taking longer and forever. And what the court has said in respect of Section 237 is that due diligence must be given to constitutional obligations. As we can see, this is a bill that stems from 2015, and all the processes that it has gone through, we are now in 2018, and we have it as a limited bill, perhaps a decision to try and fast-track and move it forward. If that is still the policy decision that we are taking, that is one bill or work of parliament where Section 237 would really need to be heeded seriously, and we try and deal with all the delays as soon as possible. Chairperson, that marks the end of the information I would have wished to impart to the committee in directing and assisting us to the way forward. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Ms. Rema. You have done Parliament very proud. You are eloquent, very clear, steady, but sure. Legal people are always very difficult to understand, but I understood you very well. Now, the opportunity will go to the department. Maybe GM will start first and say something, and Florence is the head. Let's see.
I think we let the
Ms. Florence.
Okay, thank you, Chair, and good morning, members of the committee and the colleagues of the committee. It's already indicated that Florence Rabana, Department of Public Works at the letter sent on the 16th for his apology to the committee. And thank you very much for the opportunity. Joe is going to say the yes. Before we do that, perhaps we might need to put names to faces. We have come a long way. I think Mepumela has already indicated how long the spend has been to date on the process of the bill from inception to date. I'm going to request my team members to introduce themselves, some of which, I mean, it's critical why I do this, because some of them were involved since the inception of the process. So I'm Florence Rabada, I'm the Acting DDG in the Policy Research and the regulation in the Department of Public Works, and I'll request them to introduce themselves, starting from John Day. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, honorable members. My name is John Legala. I'm the Acting Director of Property Policy. I've been involved with this bill from the very beginning when it was drafted. Thank you.
Were you acting even then?
No, Chair.
Don't like this acting.
Very professional.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Iwani Ndo, the new Chief Director in the Policy Unit, Policy Development and Regulation. I mean, I've just joined recently, but it's been only 2 weeks.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Wascam Mukwena. I am from the Department of Public Works, the Legal Service Unit. I have been long in the bill, but not as long as Mr. Joe Lega.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, for allowing us to introduce all of them. Chairperson, I'm going to request Mr. Johannes Ligana to take us through the input which we have debated in the organization with the DG himself as well prior to us presenting here today. And we have looked at options as to how best possible we can assist the portfolio committee as it continues in this journey of the bill, looking at how far we have come from and how quickly, I mean, in the interest of the serving the public, as the chair has said, is concerned, we need to see things through. Mr. Jones is going to take us through the presentation, the purpose of which is mainly, as I indicated, to assist. Just go to slide one, yeah? The Portfolio Committee on Public Works in the deliberation on the facts that are surrounding the revision of the expropriation bill back to Parliament. And I must say, as I indicated, I'm glad to indicate that there are some similarities on the inputs that we have just heard from Mep Pumelelo here. We hope that it even makes, you know, we looked at the same document and there are some similarities on the inputs that we have made as well, as we will soon hear from Joe. And we're going to be assisting the portfolio committee on the process to assess the options that are available to address the issues that are raised in certain letters concerning the bill. And we are going to put some recommendations for the committee's consideration. And maybe just to put a little disclaimer there to the extent that we have done justice, we have looked at the case law, the Lamosa, the Doctors of Life cases, as well as the Madaliele cases, and the deliberations that were had in September last year with the Portfolio Committee surrounding these cases and how then we recommend to the Portfolio Committee to take forward as we project. So Joe, without further ado, and thank you, Deputy Minister and the Chairperson, I'm going to request Joe to just first briefly give us a background and then continue with the input, including the recommendation on the bill. With your permission, Chair. Thank you.
Ms. Lawrence, over to you, Joe.
With your permission, Chair, I will go straight to the background. Before we make this point out that
please bear with me in case I repeat some of the things that has already been touched upon, because we may have seen most of the things the same way. Allow me that opportunity to just cover, to go through everything, and then we can go to the item that deals with innovations. Yeah, the writing is small, so I'll use my hard copy and then I'll just juggle around. The Minister of Public Works tabled an expropriation bill in Parliament in February 2015. More than a year later, on 26 May 2016, Parliament passed the expropriation bill B40 2015 into law. I should just pause here and point out that in May 2016, I think it was just 3 months after the Lamosa judgment had been handed down in by the Constitutional Court. So the events that unfolded when the president was supposed to assent to the bill after it was passed into law happened after Lamosa. So we became aware perhaps immediately around that period when these issues were raised with the president. Thereafter, the bill was transmitted to the president for assent as required by the rules of parliament. Several interested parties thereupon directed written objections to the president, dissuading him from signing the expropriation bill into law. Accordingly, the president directed a formal inquiry on this matter to both the Speaker of Parliament and the chairperson of the National Council of Provinces. By a letter dated 19 July, the chairperson of the NCOP replied to the president's inquiry and concluded, "We are satisfied that the National Council of Provinces complied with the requirements of the Constitution and the rules in processing the expropriation bill, and there is no merit in the outlined procedural issues." That is the response that came from the chairperson of the NCOP. On 27 September 2016, the Minister of Public Works added his voice by directing the president's attention to the precedent set by the Lamosa judgment based on similar circumstances. Around this time, when the president wrote to both the Speaker of Parliament and the chairperson of the NCOP, he also CC'd our minister. The letter was CC'd to our department. And it is at that time that we also realized that no, perhaps we should just really respond according to what we picked up in Lamosa, because when we looked at the facts in the Lamosa judgment, they really mirrored the processes that we had engaged in the processing of the expropriation. What actually happened, you know, during the public participation process from the National Assembly to the NCOP and the provincial legislatures. When you go through Lamosa, it's as if what happened there was actually what happened in the expropriation. Hence, our minister felt that we really had to say something on this issue. And we wrote a letter and brought Lamosa to the attention of the presidency. On 14 February 2017, the president decided to remit the expropriation bill to Parliament in terms of Section 79(1) of the Constitution. This fact is contained as an announcement in Parliament's ATC reports of 20 February 2017. The President's requirement requires Parliament to address the four issues he raised regarding the bill, which are whether it is indeed correct that the negotiating and final mandate procedures in some provincial legislatures were blocked. B, whether it is indeed correct that the NCOP failed to facilitate sufficient consultation with the public prior to the adoption of the bill. C, the reasons why the bill was not referred to the National House of Traditional Leaders. D, which is the last, the merit of the submissions insofar as they relate to the procedural issues outlined above. So we tried in this presentation to really confine ourselves to these four issues. We looked at the joint rules of Parliament, you know, in the course of trying to make sense of you know, the four issues that were raised. But we acknowledged, you know, upfront that you know, this is the terrain of Parliament. Parliament is the expert on this issue. We stand to be corrected where we may not be correct. Part 8 of the Joint Rules of Parliament deals with bills referred back to Parliament by the President. Part 8 of the Joint Rules of Parliament applies to Section 76 bills, of which the expropriation bill is one. It is arguable that the four reservations raised by the President in respect of the expropriation bill are primarily of a procedural nature. It would seem the intention of the drafters of the Joint Rules of Parliament was to require that the referral back to Parliament either explicitly state that it is as founded on a procedural or substantive defect depending on the objections received by the President. It is for this reason that the Joint Rules expressly and under separate headings deal with referrals based on procedural or substantive reasons or both. An unavoidable consequence of addressing a procedural defect could be to open up the possibility of previously unconsidered substantive issues. The President requires Parliament to give reasons why the bill was not referred to the National House of Traditional Leaders. That is one of the four issues that the President had reservations about. It is mandatory to refer a bill to the National House of Traditional Leaders in terms of Section 81 of the Traditional Leadership and Governance Framework Act of 2003 if it contains provisions dealing with customary law or customary traditional communities. The Chief State Law Advisor advised in paragraph 13 of the memorandum on the object of the expropriation bill against referring the bill to the National House of Traditional Leaders on the basis that its provisions did not affect customary law or customary traditional communities. The entry point of a bill remitted by the President in terms of Section 79(1) of the Constitution to Parliament is Joint Rules 203, which deals with referral to Assembly Committee. Rule 203 requires that where appropriate, the Assembly Committee confer with the corresponding Council Committee if, amongst others, the issue in the bill pertains to a procedural matter. Joint Rule 203 must be read with Joint Rule 204, which deals with debate and decision. Joint Rule 204(4) is couched in peremptory terms and avails to the Assembly the option of approaching the issue either in terms of Rule 205, 206, or 208. The President's concerns on the bill appear to fall within the purview of Joint Rule 205, which deals with procedural defects and should be read with Joint Rule 207. The application of Joint Rule 208 will be optional, depending on the findings of the Assembly during its deliberations. Joint Rules 209, 210, and 211 deal with Council procedure and are relevant in this instance since two of the President's issues in the letter specifically raise matters falling within the NCOP jurisdiction. Now, in terms of case law implications, there are striking similarities, particularly in the procedural issues that unfolded during the hearing of Olamosa and those that were raised by the objections submitted to the President regarding the process of the expropriation being in Parliament. The Olamosa litigation and that of similar constitutional case, court cases such as Doctors for Life, Matatiele, raised the elusive issue of the adequacy of public participation in the legislative making process. The applicants in the Olamosa case sought an order declaring the Restitution of Land Rights Amendment Act invalid for failure by the NCOP and some or all provincial legislatures to facilitate adequate public participation before the Act was passed as required by Section 72(1)(a) and 118(1)(a) of the Constitution. Olamosa reiterated the notion upheld in Doctors for Life that South Africa's democracy contains both representative and participatory elements. I think this point was made earlier. The court observed that these elements are not mutually exclusive, but instead show each other. In Doctors for Life, at paragraph 29, the Constitutional Court pointed out that Section 42(1) of the Constitution defines Parliament as being the National Assembly and the NCOP. This point was made again earlier. This means that the failure by one House to observe its distinct obligation to facilitate public involvement in the lawmaking process can be imputed as a failure of Parliament as a whole in its constitutional obligation. It is possible, however, that the court can accept that the public consultation process in one of the houses was constitutionally compliant, as was the case in Lamas. The Constitution settles the National Assembly, the NCOP, and provincial legislatures with separate but parallel obligations to facilitate public participation. I think this point was also made clear that they have separate obligations to facilitate public participation. The Constitution demands that the public must be afforded a meaningful chance of participating in the legislative process before Parliament can be adjudged to have discharged its duty there. The court in Doctors for Life opted for reasonableness as a standard to be used to assess whether Parliament had met its obligation of facilitating public participation. The court went on to observe that what can be regarded as reasonableness of Parliament's conduct will depend on the facts and circumstances of each case. The public consultation timelines were subjected to scrutiny by the court in its assessment of the adequacy of public consultation or constitutional compliance. Public notification, choice of venue, choice of language, time allocated for consultation, and availability of copies of the bill were subjected to scrutiny as elements of the assessment of the adequacy of consultation in Lamosa. The scrutiny exercised in Lamosa extended to the NCOP negotiating mandate, including whether delegates had attended. The liberty of the provincial legislatures to share public consultation reports to ensure that they inform the NCOP negotiating mandate process was also considered as relevant. It was as a result of the lack of sharing of reports between the provincial legislatures that it became impossible in Lamosa for the NCOP select committee members to achieve a uniform understanding of public concerns across the country. In the end, the court in Lamosa case held that given the importance of the legislation, the public participation process had been unreasonable and constitutionally invalid. A thorough consultation process was warranted in the circumstances. The court went on to echo Doctors for Life by stating the timetable must be subordinated to the rights guaranteed in the Constitution and not the rights to the Constitution. to the timetable. An important point made in Doctors for Life was that the NCOP may facilitate the public participation process through the provincial legislatures, and this in no way subordinates them to the authority of the NCOP. I think this point was also made earlier on. In terms of the recommendation, I think we recommend that this House, this committee, acknowledge the striking similarities between the unreasonable public participation process that took place in the NCOP and the provincial legislatures in the Musa judgment and the process of the expropriation bill. B, identify and implement all the procedural guiding principles and or yardsticks enunciated in the La Musa and Doctors for Life cases. C, Parliament develops standards for the application of the public participation process. I think B and C, the previous presenter touched on, I think she referred to a parliamentary model that is being developed currently. The NCOP and provincial legislatures share public participation reports because I think this is one of the flaws that was identified in Agosa and it was raised very sharply. E, the portfolio committee reached consensus on the correct joint rules to apply to the facts of the expropriation bill, and in doing so consider the importance of the bill for the country. I think that is within the discretion of this honorable committee. I thank you.
Thank you very much. People who have your name, you can call them Bra. So if you have such a name, you stand to be in the township way of respecting. And no wonder you have been there for long in the department because you are Raju. Others do not last. You last day, you see. So thank you very much. I think you share a lot of similarities even in terms of explaining the complex matter, both yourself and Unge. UDM is urging to just a few points, but I wanted to request that we take a break and then, because there's a key, then come and engage. I think we are doing well in terms of that. If that is fine, unless. Okay. Can we take a break, key break, and then we come engage ourselves. Say 15 minutes, 15 minutes, or 20. 15, that's what we think. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah. Inequalities
property and so on. I think all of that is absolutely right. And it's our constitutional mandate, regardless of our party political affiliation, whether it's in the DA or the UDM or the ANC, to ensure that as parliamentarians, and I'm one as well, by the way, that we drive the legislative process in order to drive, to assist the process of transformation. Okay. Now, what is this expropriation bill that we're dealing with? It's not a land expropriation bill. I think during our, I'm saying this, I think colleagues who were in the process for a long time will know, but I think out in the public debate, in the public sphere, often the assumption is it's essentially about land. Okay. It's about expropriation of property in general. Okay. So it's guided by Section 25 of the Constitution, the so-called property clause, which I've always said could also be called the expropriation clause, because most of what it deals with under the property clause are, one, the right of governments to expropriate in a public interest or public purpose, and the condition, way in which any expropriation should occur. Okay. So it's a general law, okay, a framework law, guiding at least 8 different ministers who currently have expropriating powers. The president also has expropriating powers. All premiers have expropriating powers. All numbers of MECs have in different provinces have expropriating powers. All municipalities have expropriating powers as well, governed by different pieces of legislation and so on. But what has been absent has been a framework which guides them about when you expropriate, how do you meet the test of constitutionality in expropriating. So there would be legislation around forests, for instance, and the rights for the DAP minister to expropriate. So the DAP minister is empowered to expropriate. But the DAP minister has no guidelines in terms of a general law, a framework law, to know how to proceed. Okay. And that's what we were seeking to do in this bill. The process that must be followed to meet the test of constitutionality. That's essentially what this bill is about. Okay. So why has it fallen to the Department of Public Works to be the lead department in the process? It could well have been the Minister of Rural Development. If the main focus was land, not exclusive, but the main focus for Minister of Justice, if it's about a general law and so on. So the reason why historically, and it's not going back to 2015 or whatever, even before back in 2007, 2008. Yeah, the Department of Public Works was an earlier version had tried to get it through Parliament and was unable to do so. The reason is that the existing general law on expropriation is an apartheid era law of 1955, and it empowered the Minister of Public Works, so it's a public privilege, if you like, but from that year, the 1975 Expropriation Act. Okay. Now that act is unconstitutional in many ways, so it has to be changed. And so that's the additional thing. So in terms of our new constitution, how do we provide general guidance to all expropriators, and for many potential expropriators, how do we provide guidance to them? Okay. So for instance, and there was a really good article which the Honourable Member from the DA was reminding me of yesterday in the Business Day, an excellent article actually explaining expropriation and Section 25 of the Constitution, so colleagues would like to look at it. But basically, for instance, that 1975 legislation basically envisages expropriation to be a willing seller, willing buyer process, which our Constitution doesn't, okay, and many other things, okay. It doesn't recognize people with unregistered rights and in property. And you know, there's many South Africans, given the apartheid and colonial past, have unregistered rights and property. And most of them aren't recognized in terms of the 1975 Act. So that's another reason why we need this piece of legislation. Okay.
So I'm being a little bit long because I think some of us have been long in the journey and others haven't, and I think as we today now address the matter. So I'm speaking now as a politician, okay, under a political mandate, okay, and our colleagues who preceded us correctly speak as officials and have done what I think very adequately have done what was required. Okay. So just the one small point before I get into our issue is that because it's the Department of Public Works that is championing this particular driving, responsible for driving this process through Parliament, Chapter 2 of the current bill deals specifically with the expropriating rights of the Minister of Public Works. Okay. A Minister of Public Works needs expropriating powers for the kinds of things that we do just have public works, okay, which have to do with property, land, buildings and property and things like that, and there might be important occasions where for a public purpose, with a public interest, expropriation would need to happen, okay. Because the only expropriating powers that the current Minister of Public Works has are defined in the 1975 Act. So we have to clean that up, okay. And then a lot of confusion, yeah, and I think I'm not mistaken, the National Health Service Commission leaders again get confused. It's only Chapter 2 that deals with the expropriating power of the Minister of Public Works. Okay. Having done that, it then moves on, and the rest of it is general framework for all ministers, MEC, premiers or whatever, municipalities. These are the processes you must follow. Okay. Now, coming to our process, I think that happened in the previous minutes. I believe that we complied very well with Section 59 of the Constitution, which covers the responsibilities in terms of public participation and facilitation in terms of legislation. So that's where, and both sets of colleagues that have spoken before have said there are remarkable parallels with the Lamota case. In the Lamota case, the Constitutional Court basically felt that the National Assembly had done what it could do by way of public participation. The problem wasn't there. The procedural problems were at the level of the NCO, that would be, and the provincial. And I agree. I think implicitly or explicitly that's what they're saying. So I think that as the portfolio committee, whether the Indian colleague is entirely happy or entirely unhappy about at least the process, I think would be constitutional muster. It's not the outcome. The colleagues also had issues in some of the comments that the chamber ESF predictably had a big problem and so on. But the process, I think, was constant. And all of the parties expressed their appreciation for the role in which we collectively worked together to develop the legislation. The problem arose in the NCO. Okay. And I think, as a deputy minister who was responsible for driving the process through Parliament, I must take some responsibility for not being vigilant enough. I felt we spent so much time in aid and so on that, okay, really the NCO pre-process didn't go quite quickly. But the colleagues in the NCRP were very keen to go very quickly as well, because the August 2016 local government elections were coming up, and we were all going on a long recess that we could all go and fight elections in our respective constituencies and so on. And so it was a very, very, very rushed process, unfortunately, extremely rushed, and had all the same features that the Lamota case had. Ridiculous timetables, meetings that were poorly advertised, poorly attended, one meeting where it was about something else that was hijacked then quickly, you know, and so on. So there were really serious problems, which is why, as Brajo and correctly said that although when the President wrote his initial letter and CC'd it to our former minister, saying, are there grounds? Issues being raised. Ironically, the issues of procedure were raised not by the ESF, not by the UDM, but by forces who were quite considered Institute of Race Relations and so on. But they were right to raise it because, well, we'd given them the gap to raise it. They thought we were going too far. The UDM feels we're not going nearly far enough, okay? Those forces thought we were going too far, and we're looking and had historically, all throughout the hearings and so on, we tried to undermine the process. They were trying to steal property, whatever. Okay, go back to Zimbabwe and all kinds of things. So we created a constitutional gap through public participation and facilitation at the NTSB level.
Right.
Okay. So although the chairperson of the NTSB said in response to the president's first letter, the process was fine, the speaker from the NHS, the process was fine. We're sure that the chairperson of the NTSB did so in good faith because told that by my colleagues there, but hadn't participated in the NCOP process.
Rondo,
Sando, and some of us welcome others. We knew it was a very, very, very vulnerable process in the constitution. We thought in our judgment that, we've done a whole lot of work now. Now let's not have the whole thing collapse in long constitutional court processes and so forth. Let's get back to Parliament, get the NCOP to do a decent process, and then, because we've basically got a quick piece of legislation in our now, okay, so our former minister wrote to the President on our office basically to say, President, we do think that the matter should be reconsidered. There were procedural weaknesses. So the President, accordingly and correctly, in our view, wrote that second letter. Okay. We're not so sure about the National House of Traditional Leaders, but it has been referred to them. They have responded. Okay. We think their responses don't understand the world, to be quite honest, and so on. But let's park that issue for a moment. Okay. So now let me be our same member politician. Now let's talk as an MC politician. So what has happened since all of this? So the mandate that we're operating under as a deputy minister, but from the ANC and as ANC parliamentarians and so forth, was a mandate on expropriation, which said that develop an expropriation legislation that is compliant fully with the constitution. Okay. Which we think we've done. But of course our mandate has now changed as a result of the ANC National Conference in December. So there's an ANC mandate, not specifically to us in public works, but to ANC MPs, not to change all expropriation, but to allow for expropriation without compensation for the purposes of land reform. Okay? Provided, and we know there's all those rights, provided in the free security, etc. Now, several issues. First of all, if that hadn't happened, let's say, and we were still before December, then the advice would have been, let's get decent NCOP and provincial legislature processes going. Let's spend a good 3-4 months doing so that we need the constitutional thing on the basis of the bill that we've got. If we do it now, if the NCOP votes now, there will be a lot of confusion at a public level in the participation process as to what certain those of us in the majority are wanting to do with expropriation. As we said at our conference, therefore it's our mandate to change the constitution. Now you can't change the constitution through a bill, through an expropriation bill. We have to change the constitution and have a two-thirds vote in the assembly and so on. And before before you can do that, you need a whole process, a comprehensive process, an ad hoc committee, review the constitutional changes, and so forth and so forth. Okay? So my proposal as a way forward on this matter is that we don't get into the substantive issue. Since the publishing law applies, mentioned 12A, okay? I'm doing what I think we should do, but let me just by way of example. So the parliamentary law advisor is concerned that under 12.2 of the bill, we say in determining the amount of compensation to be paid in terms of the fact, the expropriating authority must not, unless there are special circumstances that would be just and critical to it. So take account of A, the fact that the property has been taken without the consent of the expropriated owner or expropriated holder. Okay. Now that's exactly right, it's not wrong, and it's not unconstitutional, because what it's saying is the expropriation is not guided by willing seller, willing buyer. If you expropriate we can have a more detailed discussion. But what I'm saying is I think that your content is concerned. I think we can answer them adequately. Our challenge is the other matter, which is what those of us who are under the ANC mandate, and they're not there, they're refused, but I am, and you are, and the majority of us in the small service committee, and in the Select Committee, are ANC. We're under a different mandate, not in terms of an expropriation as a broad framework, but specifically when it comes to expropriation in regards to land reform. But you can't have a general framework until we hear how we're going to drive that, in my view. So my proposal would be that for the moment, what we do, and you have the indulgence of other members, from other political parties, for the alternative process which ANC talked about at the level of the presence of ANC and so forth, which is that a major workshop will be held to look at how to take forward this particular mandate and so on, that we await the outcomes and direction from that process, which can't be led by the Department of Public Works. It needs to be led by justice, constitutional affairs, it needs to be led by rural development, GAP, expropriation without compensation, provided there's a bit of food security, da-da-da. We don't, I'm passionate about food security, but I don't know anything about it, and my department is not specialized in that. So I think that's the situation that we're in. So I think we're just going to get ourselves into a big tangle. So I think that we've done good work as a national center. I think that the best advice would be to park the matter, await that broader outcome, and see where that goes, because that will also then have an impact on Parliament, what they need to decide on that. And I think that, and bear in mind that we probably won't get any constitutional change in this Parliament. We've got a year to go. And the constitutional amendments and stuff like that, preparing for them, text and stuff, all that, and even if you can manage it, is quite a complex process. So the sad story, Roger is going to get older, I suppose. He'll still be an acting director. But hopefully not. It's not wasted. But I think we've been setting ourselves up for a confusion, especially those of us that are okay. So sorry, I spoke quite long, but I'm trying to be helpful to this. I think it's been very helpful what the colleagues have said to us about this. They've agreed that we are very vulnerable as Parliament, not as DNA, but as Parliament, therefore collectively, for a constitutional challenge. And we can't just say that the building has to be satisfied. I think that would be wrong. We need a change in process. Yeah. So I hope that it's not necessarily good news, but I hope that tells you to what we're trying to do. Thank you. Thank you for the indulgence.
Thank you very much, dear. So this is a workshop, so we are really allowed to give input. You are free to make your input. I'm looking at another letter. My friend, my sister, my brother, who goes in. My sister over there, so very closing. From you.
Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, I just want to echo the comments of the Deputy Minister on the article from the Business Day yesterday. It should be compulsory reading for everyone in the room at least. I have just sent a link on our WhatsApp group so everyone here can read it, for those that didn't get it. But thank you, Chair, and I'd like to appreciate the presentations as well this morning. I think particularly the one from the Parliamentary Legal Advisor was on point, so thank you for that. Importantly, I think the President wrote a letter asking a question, and then that was the 20 July 2016 letter that he wrote. Now, that was obviously in response to this pack of documents that we've got here. The top one is from the Institute of Race Relations, which is quite a substantial document. I haven't read through all of it, but then also you've got submissions from the Democratic Alliance, which I think forms the basis of the President's letter, and the IFP and various other entities that have written and asked some questions specifically on the processes but also on the substance of the bill. Now, the President asked some questions specifically relating to the processes, and the comment from the presentations is that he received responses both from the NCOP and from the Minister. Clearly he wasn't very happy, and that's why the 14th of February letter, it's Valentine's Day, but I think it was a love letter that he sent out. It's quite a serious rebuke to say that Parliament hasn't done its work and this thing must go back. Now, what he's pointed out is that the issues that he's pointing to, he says that the reasons for sending it back is process driven, both in the way that process wasn't followed, but also in the fact that the process itself is flawed. I think that's quite important because that deals with the Lamorsa issue. The fact that the bill wasn't referred to the National House of Traditional Leaders, I mean, that's a beginner's error that actually should call for public flogging, that oversight. But, the other issues obviously are raised, and I think, you know, this is an important bill dealing with both the land issue and the fact that we've got bulk service provision, etc., etc. And I know that there's a lot of municipalities that are waiting for this bill because they want to expropriate land so that they can provide basic services to communities, because things like sewer lines, water supply lines and electrical supply lines need to go over land that's owned by somebody, and where there can't be agreement on price, they look to expropriation. And I know that there's a lot of service delivery that's kind of being left up in the air at the moment. Mm-hmm. So this bill is important. However, we cannot allow ourselves or allow the department to face, or Parliament to face, the embarrassment that is being faced around the Restitution of Land Rights Act, or bill, or whatever stage it's in at the moment since the Constitutional Court threw it back. Because the fact is that effectively what that has done is it means Parliament has passed a piece of legislation that is unconstitutional, that has left the beneficiaries or the claimants up in the air. It's leaving them effectively in limbo. It's leaving landowners in limbo. It's leaving investors in the country in limbo. No one can take direction. Now, if we try and push this bill through and force it through the system, what we're going to end up doing is we're going to trigger a constitutional court hearing. The constitutional court is going to find exactly the same as they did in that previous case, And if you actually look at the judgment, the Constitutional Court is effectively saying, guys, you've now got a deadline. I'm talking specifically to the Musa issue. Following is a deadline of July 2018, okay? If a decent bill isn't in place, then the court will decide how to do this. So it's not judicial overreach, it's parliamentary underreach, okay? If you're not going to do your job, you're going to force the court to actually take on your responsibilities. We don't want to end up in the same position with the expropriation bill. So I think to try and force this thing through at this stage is crazy. The National House of Traditional Leaders also raised substantive issues, as did other interest groups, but as the legal advisor indicated, that this is going to trigger a new bill or serious amendments to the bill, and other public inputs that are received may be the same. So I think also I want to echo the DM's point of view on the public participation process. This is going to be massive. If this gets opened again at this stage, you're going to have interest groups from both sides or both extremes, as well as the people in the middle that are looking for the right things to happen. Everyone's going to be out there contesting, trying to make their voices heard. And they run up to an election, of course, these things become more and more volatile. And it's opening this process up to manipulation from all sides, especially from the extremes. So, fast-tracking cannot be a solution. The word fast-tracking came out just now. To try and rush this thing through is not going to help anybody. And I think, you know, the last pages of both presentations are the ones that we need to look at. The one that says comment from the NTHL, okay, and then the one with the recommendations on the side. Now, there's three recommendations specifically that need to be considered. B, C, and D. So identify and implement all the procedural guiding principles and the yardsticks that were enunciated in the Lamorsa and Dr. Spolan cases. Parliament must develop standards for the application of the public participation process, and the NCOP and provincial legislatures must share public participation reports. I think this is going to point us in the right direction. This bill needs to be put one side until we can deal with these real process issues that need to be driven. And I think, Chair, that the responsibility will rest on yourself. I'm not delegating to you, but I'm suggesting perhaps this is now your responsibility, that we need to write to the Speaker and the Chairperson of the NCOP and or the Deputy President as the leader of government business and you know, in light of those two cases, and ask for a guideline in terms of what public participation needs to happen, what processes need to be followed. There needs to be a standard way that this thing is taken forward. Specifically, I understand that the majority of it falls on the shoulders of the NCOP, but certainly as the National Assembly and the Portfolio Committee, we also have roles to play in public participation as well. And I think that it's imperative that a firm set of guidelines be put forward, because otherwise what we're doing is we are setting up other departments and ourselves as well going forward in terms of any legislation that gets tabled is going to be tied up in the same problems until such time as there's an acceptable standard that has been drawn up in consultation with the Constitutional Court's judgments so that we can ensure that public participation happens properly. You know, public participation can be very uncomfortable. Coming out of local government, I know for a fact, you know, I've been, yourself as well, we've been petrol bombed and stoned and taken hostage and all sorts of things when we go to public participation. That's the real face of it. That is where the people are telling us what they want and what their expectations are. And I think, yeah. So, Chair, yes, I think it's important this bill needs to not be fast-tracked, but to be paused. And we need to find a way of taking it forward, addressing this important issue of expropriation, which is holding back service delivery across the board, which is holding back land redistribution as well, and holding back various different issues. But we can't rush this, because otherwise we're going to end up hamstringing ourselves exactly the same as the Restitution of Land Rights Act has hamstrung the land redistribution. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Now, my friend.
Can you share for the opportunity?
Well, I was there when first this bill was presented
to this committee in 2015. And one thing that remained in question in my mind and still is able today is why did we as this committee not go around the country to conduct public hearings on such an important Section 76 bill? I think as a committee we need to deal with that, because as much as we may relish the opportunity of assigning so much blame to the NCOP, we are just as guilty. Because if we've done that, whatever shortcomings the NCOP might have done, we would be saying we have done public, conducted public hearings, and so the general public of South Africa have had an opportunity to input into this very important bill. It's important that we do that, we consider that as a policy of doing that now. It's not too late because of the importance of the bill, and this is a matter that has been said so many times in the presentations, you know, we're considering the importance of the bill. We all know how important this piece of legislation is to address the social needs of the country, the political agenda of the country, as well as the economic needs of the country. Those are the three very obvious, just about everybody, reasons why this is such an important piece of legislation. The moment you talk about expropriation of property, a lot of people think about expropriation of land and get all sorts of reactions. One example, for instance, is the 2.9 million hectares virtually under ownership of the Ngonyama Trust, which we know is headed by one person. He has already indicated how he feels about any possibility of expropriation. So it's no longer just a question of white people feeling threatened, but there's a whole lot of people of a different color who feel that they want to make an input in this. So for those reasons, Chairperson, I want to put it succinctly that I recommend that as this committee we take a decision at the right time to go to the various provinces and conduct those public hearings so that nobody at the end of the day will say we were denied the opportunity to express ourselves. For us to invite people to Cape Town, Cape Town, as we all know, is a province right at the end of the country, and it's so inconvenient for people. I remember when I suggested that certain people should come, it was members of the Mthatha Ratepayers Association. What about Ratepayers Association from Queenstown, from Plaxton, and so on? And of course, Parliament facilitated and paid for them to come here. But that was just one isolated case. Who else ever came down here from the Eastern Cape, a province with over 6 million people? Through certain bodies, some people may have spoken on behalf of the people of the Eastern Cape. I'm not singling out Eastern Cape because I come from that. I'm just using it as an example. It's as simple as all that, you know. Okay, so that's the first point that I wanted to put across. And then the question of the traditional leaders. I've read the opinion about the need or the non-affectability or lack of need to consult them. I think it's a technical point to simply say this is not a typical traditional matter. If we define the word tradition, if we drill deeper, you'll find that traditionally, people look up to those traditional leaders as de facto owners of the land. They rarely be in the case of Ngonyama Trust, but de facto people know that if you're looking for land in a typical rural area, you have got to touch base with those traditional leaders. So I just don't respect that just because we want to narrow, the definition of the role constitutionally of the National House of Traditional Leaders. Therefore, there was no point in consulting them. They are de facto owners. That's how rural people, look at them. You don't just walk in there. Hence, there's so much complaints that some of them go beyond that and they just sell land. Because they regard it as theirs.
I'm not saying they are right, but that's the depth of their understanding that this is my land. It's under my control. I do what I please. I repeat, I'm not saying that is correct. So that's my input in so far as consulting with them. So we need to go, you know, to be specific and issue a letter of invitation to them and get closer to where they are. And I like it when our legal person, parliamentary legal person, says obligation to consult the public at large, to quote the words, at large. I noted that. And this is one of the pillars on which I stand to recommend that we go to the public at large. It's on a specific, you know, way, sentence to that effect. So we need not just think that it's sufficient for us to consult certain bodies just because they have had the opportunity to write to the president. A lot of people complain or compliment the president for this and that, but they don't necessarily write. But certain institutions here actually took the opportunity to write to the president. So I go where, you know, with that. And section 59(1)(8) of the Constitution says that the National Assembly must facilitate public involvement in the legislative processes. So we do not have an option. All that, as my colleague from the DS indicated, is for us to carry out what the department has recommended, that Parliament refines the processes to be followed in order for a process to be qualified, so to speak, to say we have done all that was necessary. But we're not going to wait for that. We have got a pretty good idea for this committee of how we would go about this. We know who is likely to be affected, you know, and that would be the way to approach. Key to this bill also is the issue of compensate or not compensate. That question is going to arise. There is no question of doubt about that. And we need to brace ourselves to deal with that. It's going to arise in practically every forum, especially when you're talking, commercial property. For some people, for others, residential property is more important than commercial because they do not have the wherewithal to start up any commercial undertaking. So that's one of the reasons why it becomes important for us to once more give the people a fair platform to say we are with or we are not. On a lighter and naughty note, I would say the ANC situation is not helping here. Speaking with different minds. Unfortunately, as much as the ANC likes to claim that they are leaders in society, if you were to try to follow their policy here, you would not know which direction to go. And that, unfortunately, is a fact. I repeat, I'm just mentioning this on a naughty note. But it's a fact. And lastly, Chair, I must say that we appreciate the comments of the DM, you know, in this matter. I know that he, together with a few other people this side, have been with this bill, you know, all along, and we have got, an understanding that as legislators combined with the executive, we have to produce a masterpiece of legislation that will seriously address the issues of land reform, because this is one of the principal things that is mentioned, you know, in the preamble of the bill. So whatever deliberations we undertake, we've got to bear that in mind. That is one of the things that this bill seeks to address. It's there in the preamble of the bill. That is my 2 cents worth of input. Thanks for the opportunity.
Thank you very much, Honorable Beldane. We now want to hear Dr. Sichu Matova.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. Greetings to our DM. And thanks for the presentation from the legal section as well as the department on the very same matter. Now, firstly, I want to say, you know, even on the joint rules, there is an indication talking about the issue of fast-tracking the bill to say that you don't just fast-track without the reason. you must motivate deeply why you want to fast track, because there is a need of public participation. So public participation is important. The obligation is not a choice, because this is a constitutional matter that we need to follow as parliament. I think my colleague is correct to say that we must have guidelines of only public participation. But as a parliament of the republic, we do have a public participation framework for public sector institutions. We do have that one. But the problem, I think, is that rush that really was done, as the DM is indicating, to say that even at NCOP, I know that NCOP wants a raise to say that we always dump the bill to them when they were about to go to a set to finalize it, which is a problem. I think our timing is critical when we are dealing with the bill, so that we cannot rush the public participation. And the understanding that is being said to say that one house of the parliament, if they do wrong things, it nullifies everything. I think my recommendation, but I think the DM touched on it. When I was thinking about it, I was going to recommend that we come together with the select committee, get the understanding, you know, to say that this is what has transpired, all of us, because we must not work in silos. One of the things that is raised is like provinces not, you know, sharing reports with NCOP or this particular sector not sharing the report. So we must not work in silos. NCOP is here in Parliament. Why don't we come together when we are dealing with these things and then outline, say this is what we're going to do. And if we agree to say that because of the financial constraints on the budget, Parliament must go to these provinces, do thorough work, and the NCOP go to other provinces, do thorough work also. Go to the provinces, not calling people in Parliament, because it limits the participation. It's not about compliance. It's about an input and people trying to influence the legislation that are going to affect them. So that's why it's critical for us to do as a parliament. But I think also this public participation guideline for public legislative sector, we need to revisit it. Maybe have a workshop, you know, understand it, because it's there. But maybe the understanding, the way we are using it, we don't really focus on it. Also, the issue of the compensation, I think my colleague covered me. Compensation or not compensation, you know, during the expropriation. It's something, I think, the DM touched on it to say that as we are here in Parliament, we have got a policy position that is being implemented here. Then we will follow it to say this is what we must do. We must do this expropriation in line with the Constitution. And if there is another policy position of the ruling party, maybe we can go on the ground. Also, as we are saying, we want to do wide consultation, and we have a challenge when we go on the ground, talking about the things that people have been raising to say that no, we don't want to compensate for the land that was stolen and so on. But also, we can't just finalize it right there. I think I agree with the DM when the DM is saying, no, let us wait for this broad consultation that our deputy president is going to do, you know, because I think also he will take also in consideration of the other political parties, because this is not thing for one party. It's something that all we need to contribute to it, and then when we take this bill forward, we know exactly, we have a guide to say that we are taking this direction, because at the moment, when you go on the ground really, will face resistance. They will say now the policy is saying, because most of the people they were commenting, even those that were not, that are not ANC, you know, they were saying on the ground, this is the right position now. This is the right, they were phoning, you know, on the phoning program. But really, we need to meet and fast track this program. maybe to write to the speaker or the deputy president, indicating that now we are sitting with this thing, we need a guideline, we can't move, you know, because we want, when we move, everybody understand the direction we are taking. As the colleague was saying, even the colleague, you know, is dear Megar, does not know which direction to take. He said, we don't know which direction, we must follow for the ANC. So now the deputy president, when it is calling this broad forum to discuss this, will have a direction going forward. I think really, I don't think we need to rush this. I don't think we need to rush this bill. I think we must wait so that we do a court thing. But also it will be important when we meet, because when we take this position that we must write, I was of the view that it will be better if we were joined. We are speaking with one voice, so that even the national chair of NCOP, the people that are there are part of the decision that we are taking. Because we take that decision, when they think they take another decision. Maybe I will propose, Chair, that we meet joined, even that we are not taking this bill forward, but getting the same understanding to say, is it the same understanding that we are having on these concerns that the President has raised, and the public, those representatives of the public that we're putting forward, before we write. Because we write, the others receive and write other things, whereas we are talking with one subject. So I propose that maybe we have a joint meeting, look at this thing, indicate to them that we have met, but this is our feeling as a committee that we have discussed going forward. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mandela. Maybe I must, before Honorable Freddy Adams, must clarify that the select committee were invited to be part of the workshop, but they apologized, indicating that they are busy in another process, but we will still ensure we find them, because we have a duty to find them, whether at a portfolio committee level, or but we'll have to find the means. Maybe I may engage even the chair of the select committee as well, but meeting together, we have attempted to ensure that they are here, so it's not that nothing was done. So we were clear that I think Ms. Kugama was also clear about the engagement that we need to ensure that they are here. We did that, ma'am. So I'm sorry they are not here. I did took your advice very serious. So but we still meet them, I think, so that you don't think we didn't invite them. So we did. Maybe it's a matter of time to make them see the importance of us deciding together, because we are in the same boat together. We're representing the same people. When there's something wrong on one side, it is seen as it's wrong with all aspects, even the other side of parliament. Honorable Freddy Adams.
Well, thank you, Chair. Let me thank the parliamentary Lord Vice for wonderful input that she's made, also the department as well as the Deputy Minister. Chair, I want to agree with the Deputy Minister, and it was, and it is the stance that I think we should park this thing until possibly the end of April. There will be certain processes followed by the ruling party before the end of March, and then the broader summit called by the Deputy President within the month of April. That will give us a clear guideline on our way forward, and our workings on the way forward. I think part of the reason that the NCOP is not attending today is possibly on that, because when I spoke to one member of the NCOP committee, they were saying that why should we duplicate matters? They'd rather wait for the ruling party and for the other processes that will follow. Because I've also spoke to the chairperson of the NCOP at a meeting that we were together, as well as the chief whip of the NCOP. And they also they made a commitment that we should have the joint process, as I've explained to them what happened in the Doctors for Life and in the other cases. When I was still a member of that house, how we then dealt with the issues and going forward in that regard. So, I'm not the spokesperson of the NCOP, but just to give the committee what we've engaged with it. Now, the problem is, most of the cases that the Constitutional Court or that does not stand constitutional muster is on the part of the NCOP. There was no case so far that I know that the Constitutional Court has rejected or set back that was on the basis of the NA not doing its work properly. But it hasn't stopped the NA from also doing it simultaneously. Because I know last year they've taken a decision, the joint rules, to do processes also for the NA. That's why we could see that rural development and land reform and all those other committees, not last year, the previous term, for the NA committees to go out and do public participation as well when they adopted or when they broadened the public participation model of Parliament. So nothing will stop us from also going and joining with the NCOP, because rightly, as the Parliamentary Legal Advisor said, one house, Parliament consists of two houses. One house makes a fault in terms of public participation in all those processes. The onus is also on the other house. But if the other house has done correctly, because it is by the way of a reasonable opportunity to participate effectively. Now, yes, we can say as the NA that we have done that. But did we give the people of Flagstaff, Siki Siki, Aititwa, those back of the beyond people, Bisho is not so back of the beyond, but that has got an airport, so it's not so back of the beyond. those people, Mujahid, did we give them a reasonable opportunity and what effect of the opportunity to get them to Parliament? Or were they supposed to pay out of their own pocket to get to Parliament? Or what did we as an MA did, as a public committee, as a portfolio committee, what did we do to get those people to be part of the democratic process? In terms of the legislation that has got an impact on their lives as well. This legislation hasn't just got an impact on farmers, but it's got an impact of our rural people out there, in the villages, in the towns. Oh man, it's got that impact. People of Hilltown and those type of places. Did we give them that opportunity? Then the question will come to mind, no. Because who presented before us as a portfolio committee? It was the organized people. People that can organize themselves, people that can come together, appoint a lawyer to come down to Cape Town and speak on their behalf. Not the back of the beyond. Not our deep rural people. Flagstaff, Gogo, Siki Siki. Yeah, I don't know why, where does the Siki Siki comes in, but Kokstad and all those places. Those people, did we provide meaningful opportunities? We only provide meaningful opportunities for a few, but not for those. So there will be no harm, I think, from my point of view, and the point of view which I also canvass. There will be no harm in going out and doing those things after we get the proper guidance, the guidelines in terms of that thing, this type of thing, specifically with this book, Chairperson. So I would suggest that we pass this, but in the meantime, we keep our eye on the ball, keep our eye on the game, and we've got a capable, competent, very legal, sharp legal brains, parliament legal advisor that can take us through. And if she sees a fault, she can quickly tap us on the shoulder and says, Chairperson of committee, I think there you are veering off the road as such. And then, Chair, the department, I know the department always feel that it's their goal, and they have, at the moment it's not their goal now, it's our goal. Committee's bill at the moment. It's not their bill. It's out of their hands now. We deal with the bill now. So I want to put them at ease and to say that I hear that and I've seen that some of your remarks are in line with what's it, Hank Smith, LRA or LRC? What's it, LRA? Hank Smith is what? LRA? No? LRC. It's in line with the LRC's things and recommendation and all that. But at the moment, I would suggest that Deputy Minister that the department also give us the space as Parliament, as Portfolio Committee, to deal with the issues. We won't just put them once and throw them. It must be like conjoint twins running this process together, Chair. And I thank for the recommendation and that. And we will engage with the NCOP. We won't stop engaging from my side, from the Wapiti side. We will definitely engage with them and keep the committee and yourself up to date on what's the process, what can we do, how can we go about, and what can we take further. Thank you, Jay.
Thank you very much, Honorable Freddie Adams. The lady that will conclude would be our Mama Elizabeth Kateka de Manungu Masihera.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. I'm also want to say we thank so much for the presentation that we got, both of them, and also the one of the DM. I think, as all our colleagues have already said, we have no option but to go out and meet with the people, do proper consultation on this bill. But indeed, we have also to get a clear direction as we go out and do it. So, being the last one, I know all of them have said that, let us make sure that we do the right thing. And it was an eye-opener for us to say in future when we've got a bill, we have to go and consult with the people down there. This is a very, very important bill which needs people to have time to air their views on it. So I think that would be the better option. We meet with the NCOP and see how we can divide ourselves to go to all the provinces and do consultation. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The honourable members have spoken. Officials that are here, you are also alarmed. So that is clear to me that those legal people who spoke were so convincing and persuasive that their argument persuaded yourself, including the DM's argument. So I think from the chair's desk, I'm also quite happy that we have managed to nicely rush the time, nicely, not the NCOP way. our way. because there's really no point that was not made by our legal people, and no point that was not made by panelist members, and allowed everybody to say the piece. I must appreciate that the commitment that was indicated in the apologies, that Honorable Njogo would be joining us. Indeed, she's here, as it was confirmed. So, my lady, we are happy that you are back. You will find us almost about to close, but closing well with you among us is giving us a lot of pleasure. Maybe a few words that from the chair I must say. Sometimes it's nice when you are here, because you also hear when people are contradicting themselves. You need guidance, some standards, some procedures, and also with a framework. So if there's something that this government of the ANC has done well, is public participation. It's something that was done even before you became a government. Tell me, dilly darling, about that. Now we need somebody to tell us how.
It's not really.
You know, it's just part of politics, to be honest. You know, consulting people. We know it, church people, you know, in all community sectors, we are good in consulting, so we know. And even this thing of calling people to parliament and not go to our areas where people are, is that something new that people like these posh offices and halls, they don't want to go out? Is that something that is out of order? We are a government of the majority, and majority of South Africans are poor. Not the 10% that hold 80% of the economy and land. Not those. So we owe these people that are poor. They may be voiceless, but they put us here. I think this thing of delivering, we're doing that. Not always good. There may be some chances good, but not always good. Because we're delaying the justice to those that are poor, those that are oppressed. You see, all these things leading to these justifications, some terms, use terms to justify murder. We're giving more life to the legacy of apartheid that continues to oppress the poor. I think we have a duty, Dr. Mandela, to speak for the poor. So I think, DM, we have a duty. A law like this, we cannot deal with it this way. Florence, in the interview, you said you are equal to the task. You are good in solving problems. Let's see if you can solve problems. Complicated situation, you said you have answer. You can go and extra mile. That's what you said in the interview. Let's see it now. How did this bill take this long? Legal guru, you said no, you were not there. There's no such in organizations. Whether you were there or not, you were always there. You are a successor in law. You must answer the question. We don't want to hear you were not there. Answer. And if you are equal to the task, that's what you said in the interview. So I'm saying the workshop has done its purposes. The purpose of the workshop is to enlighten us, give us a background, simplify the matter, tell us the options. So I think that was done. It is up to us to then take it forward to our respective organizations, to our respective, because we also work with one committee that works with Parliament, to also consult various people, but please let's not forget those of us who are politicians elected by the people, that they expect more than these beliefs. The poor people expect more than these beliefs. Kachega said, things that we are too scared to touch is putting people in a situation that they are not supposed to be. In closing, I was happy that one entity of the department, CIDB, had a report after they were looking at various situations in South Africa. They were monitoring the transformation in the construction industry. So I was expecting my people to give me a summary interpretation of that. I was quite happy that they publicized the report that in terms of transformation, we are paying our people. South Africa is still controlled by the few, as it was controlled during the apartheid days. In fact, the few are getting more millions now. When we are here, so I'm saying we are supposed to be representing the marginalized people. So I was happy with that report because it's telling the truth. Because you know, we must be told the truth. If we are now persuaded to delay, then but the truth must be told. Because when Florence is in key offices, influential offices, transformation is not moving with Florence, not moving with Mabunge, even Gato, not helping the situation. Transformation, things are still remaining with the few. So this is not a good thing. So all of us must not be happy. All of us members must not be happy because the Constitution says we must transform society, reverse the imbalances of the past, make everybody feel relevant. The citizens must really appreciate that they've elected the government of the people. So far, we're good in talking, but we're not walking the talk. I hope as we go away in various departments, no officials here, they are very powerful. Instead, somehow, they make you move and make you not move. Very powerful those things, and they're gentlemen. So that's why I'm also saying the word to yourself. We really expect more. Public Works is very influential department in many respects, so we expect you to move. Don't be happy when we delay things you are achieving. In terms of the people you are not achieving. So that the whole thought is achieving these purposes, we now know where things stand. It is up to us then to move. Ladies and gentlemen, I think we have done our work. Thank you very much to those that presented. We are more enlightened. And we have even have documents to repair. So even when we report to other principals of ours, we have something to work on. Thank you very much. Please meet me at all.
I just want to ask if the ANC members, including Deputy Minister, no, not as Deputy Minister, but as a member of the ANC, can just stay behind for about 10 minutes, please.
Thank you very much. The meeting is